But even then, the resource problem remained. You might not have as many of your troops killed, you know, by cannonballs or this kind of thing, but you had to keep them around a fortress, often dug into the ground under conditions was actually resembling the First World War, in the mud, in the water, and so on and so forth. And of course, you had to feed them, you had to keep them dry, you had to keep them clothed, and so on and so forth. Don't forget that an army, as I've mentioned in an earlier lecture, an army of 20 to 30,000 people is like maintaining an entire city, besieging a fortress. And so the costs involved were really enormous. Indeed, when Philip II was waging his wars in the Netherlands, his advisors were constantly warning him about this. And actually in the year 1574, the Spanish Governor General of the Netherlands warns Philip quite directly. And he says that there would not be time or money enough in the world to reduce by force the 24 towns which have rebelled in Holland. And if we are to spend as long in reducing each one of them as we have taken over similar ones so far, we will run out of money. And the governor actually was quite right. These artillery fortresses, as we might want to call them, defied all of Philip's efforts to reduce them until he went bankrupt, as we've seen. Philip went bankrupt in 1575, and his army mutinied and abandoned all of its posts in 1576. Having reviewed the changes on the battlefield and the changes involved in siege warfare in that manner, it should be fairly obvious that the net effect of all of these technical changes was a vast increase in the simple monetary cost of warfare. And this, as we've seen, was a crucial factor in explaining the ultimate outcome of the revolt of the Netherlands. That is to say, a small watery province of the Habsburg Empire manages to hold off everything that the Spanish crown can throw at it. Now, it is true, I think we have to say, that although the Spanish Empire had enormous resources, it had enormous commitments as well, and I've mentioned on several occasions how Philip found it very difficult to concentrate all of his forces in one place for any period of time because there was always a problem with the Turks in the Mediterranean, or there was some kind of conflict with the French, or something else like that. But there is, however, something that we have to keep in mind, which is that it always takes two sides to fight a war. And it seems to me, therefore, that the real question in explaining the what you might want to call the fiscal reasons for the ultimate outcome of the war in the Netherlands is not so much why Philip II went bankrupt, since war, after all, bankrupted almost all European crowns during the 16th century. The much trickier question, it seems to me, is why did Philip go bankrupt first? In other words, sure, he went bankrupt, but presumably his enemies had the same fiscal problems as well. Why didn't they go bankrupt before Philip did? Now, part of the answer, I think, should be fairly clear by now. In the first place, the Dutch rebels received enormous financial support from England and from France, so that their fiscal problems were relieved to some extent insofar as the costs of troops, the costs of fortifications and of sieges and so on and so forth was bankrolled by the Henrys of France and by Elizabeth I of England. Second of all, a lot of the technical changes we've talked about so far tended to have the effect of favoring the defense over the offense, the fact that you could spread the cost of building a fortress over several years, but the cost of capturing a fortress had to be provided all at once. The general tendency of a lot of these other technologies was to make it an awful lot harder to attack someone than it was to defend yourself against an enemy. Moreover, and this is a fact which I think often gets left out of a lot of discussions of the revolt of the Netherlands, it is indeed the case that the Dutch rebels had very, very severe financial problems. For example, I've talked an awful lot about Philip II's 1575 bankruptcy and his ensuing problems, but it should also be stressed that the provincial states of Holland, that is to say the representative states of the province of Holland, themselves also went bankrupt in the same year, in 1575. In fact, they simply had to suspend all payment on their debts. Moreover, as long as we're keeping score, in some sense, it should be pointed out that whereas Philip II was able to resume payment of his debts, only 2 years later, in 1577, having reorganized his finances, he was able to start resuming payments to his creditors, the provincial states of Holland didn't begin to honor any of their debts again until the year 1586. But when all qualifications have been made about outside financial help and the very genuine fiscal problems which the Dutch rebels themselves face, there is one fairly revealing comparison, which at least to my mind points to a very remarkable kind of strength in the Dutch Netherlands, which Spain simply could not match. And that fact, it's an almost quantitative fact, is as follows. Philip II, and after him several of his successors, his son Philip III, and so on and so forth, went repeatedly bankrupt whenever their debt load got to the point where it was about 10 times as large as their annual revenues. So, you know, they couldn't sustain that. That would drive them into bankruptcy. By comparison, during the early 17th century, the province of Holland was easily able to sustain a public debt which was at least 12 times as large as its annual revenues. So there was something about the economy of the Netherlands which allowed it to sustain very higher debt levels. And although it seems very mundane to be talking about financing and debt when we're talking about warfare, the reality is, as we've seen in earlier lectures, that logistics were often crucial, indeed often more crucial than strategy or tactics, in determining the outcome of a war.